From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report coming to you today live from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. Thank you so much for being in our studio audience here in the University of Illinois tent. We do appreciate you being with us. We'll talk today with a whole bunch of our grain analysts that you hear. It'll be much like our Commodity Week program. We hope that you'll ask questions as we go through the next hour on this Farm Progress Show site. If you're at the radio stations, we'll have our normal time slot for the afternoon from 2:06 to 2:36. A few of our radio stations drop off at the bottom of the hour, but we do appreciate everybody being along with us. Let's take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago at the CME Group on this Tuesday afternoon. September corn futures at $7.63.5. We're up 7.25 cents on the day. December contract up 5.25, settled at 7.75 1/4, and the March at 7.87 1/4. 5.5 cents higher. July futures up 6.25 at $7.94. Next year's December contract at 6.67 1/4. And it finished the day in the December 0.75 cents higher. September soybean futures 10.75 cents higher at 14.48 3/4. November contract, your harvest month, settled at 14.66 1/4. It was up 10 1/4. And the March futures at 14.66 even for the day. 9 cents higher. The May futures at 14.59 1/4, up 8 3/4 on the afternoon. And the November of next year at $13.79 3/4, up 8 3/4 for the day. Wheat futures finished the September contract down 7 cents at 7.50 1/4. And July of next year at 8.38 3/4, 3.5 cents lower on the day. During this half hour, we'll talk with Don Olson, and we'll talk with also Larry Hossider. And Larry is with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. Don, of course, with Farm Credit Services. And our analyst will be with us. We have Mr. Brugler from Omaha, Nebraska, and he probably came as far as anybody. But our regular set of analysts, including Dale Durkles, are here. And I see Aaron Curtis from Midco out in our audience and a few other folks. So we'll have a good time taking our way through this program for the afternoon. Remember, you can always hear us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. We're there not long after we finish the production of our programs, and that'll happen again today, courtesy of Dave Dickey, who's the director of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming. He's back at the radio station monitoring right now to make sure, well, that we get on to the air, and if we don't, Dave will help us fill in for this program. He'll make sure one way or the other that we get part of the program up on our website at willag.org yet this afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a cooler biased weather pattern is expected across the eastern U.S. during the first days of September. Near to below average temperatures will occur, and precipitation may continue restricted in many areas. Rain will fall across the dry areas of Iowa today. The precipitation, however, will evaporate as it tries to cross into the eastern Midwest, where there are only a few light showers expected. Two cool fronts will move through the central and eastern U.S. late this week into the weekend, resulting in opportunities for rain. But with the tropical system in the Gulf of Mexico, rainfall will be restricted and mostly below average, limiting relief to areas of Illinois, southern Indiana, and Kentucky. U.S. hard red winter wheat areas will get some moisture over the coming week to 10 days, but it will be poorly distributed, leaving need for greater rain in many areas.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Live from the Farm Progress Show, this is the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. During the next half hour, we'll have many of our analysts on stage with us and a few other surprises along the way. We have three guests with us at the moment, not usually on the air with us, but we're going to talk with the folks from Farm Credit Services and from the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and from the Illinois Farm Bureau. We'll start with Farm Credit Services. Don Olson is here. He is somebody who takes care of land values. Well, he doesn't take care of land values, but with Farm Credit Services, he watches land values intently. Mr. Olson, we've seen over the last quarter an 18% jump in the value of land in the state of Illinois. It has been phenomenal. And if you've been watching land in the state for quite some time, you know that it's doubled, actually more than doubled, since 2004. And can it continue at this pace?
Well, now you're asking for a prediction, and
that's what analysts do.
Yeah, I can most. Well, they're on next, though. I was going to talk about what's happened. Land values for high quality land in the last year have gone up 32%, according to the study we just completed the end of July. Medium quality land's gone up 25%. Lower quality land's gone up 18% in the northern part of our territory, which is central Illinois, and the southern part of the territory, 13%. So those are pretty staggering numbers in 1 year's time. As you said, more than double since 2005. A lot of that's been driven by low interest rates and high commodity prices.
There will be more than one producer, a landowner here, who remembers the late 70s, the early 80s, and then the crisis of the mid-80s. That was caused in large part because those producers and landowners were over-leveraged when they purchased property. That's not the case this time around?
Well, that was a different period. It was an interesting time, and actually I started with Farm Credit in 1976, and I remember when land got to $3,500 and then dropped to $1,800. As you said, that was a different time. That we're not as leveraged. There's not as much debt. Debt-to-asset ratio isn't as high, but there's more dollars of debt.
Let me ask you another question. When you make and when you look at the bank statements of producers, there are many that are forced to purchase equipment that they may or may not need because of the large numbers that are coming into their accounts. Does that create a problem for them eventually, do you think?
Well, there's a lot of tax planning that takes place in farming, whether it's equipment or prepaying expenses or postponing sales. A lot of tax planning takes place. I don't think too many people drive their operation by overbuying equipment, but I suppose that could happen.
I was asking the question, not supposing it could happen. What are the pitfalls that could happen?
Well, the biggest concern probably is that land values would not be sustained at these levels, and people who anticipate these commodity prices and profit margins staying this way and leveraging themselves for that position if things change, especially if interest rates increase, which is more likely than decreasing, that's going to change the equation.
That brings us to the economy in general. Are you concerned about the economy from the agricultural side?
We're blessed in agriculture that these are pretty good times for agriculture, maybe too good times. But they're certainly much better than the rest of the economy. Fiscal problems may bleed over into agriculture. International economy problems may bleed over into agriculture. We're certainly not immune from it, but we're pretty well positioned in this sector right now.
Give Don Olson a nice round of applause. Don Olson with Farm Credit Services. Thank you so much, Don, for being with us this afternoon. Larry Hossider is with us from the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. We talked about the economy. Ethanol is a big part of the agricultural economy at this point. When you and the Illinois Corn Marketing Board get together and have your discussions, what do they center on?
Well, I think we all know that ever since ethanol entered into the agriculture market, for 30 years, the price of corn stayed between $1.75 and $3.50. Now, granted, we had increased productivity in that time to offset some of the inflation factors of it, but when we entered into the era of biofuels, we entered into a different price plateau in our grains because of that. And truthfully now, when you look at nearly 5 billion bushels of corn out of the 13 billion that we grew last year is used in the ethanol. But keep in mind, one-third of that 5 billion comes back as dried distiller's grain to feed our livestock. That is a huge market. And one of the greatest concerns that we have in this year, quite honestly, is when I look at some of the ears here that don't look very promising. If our to-stocks ratio and exceed our carryover, there could be some major implications in Washington, D.C., and I'm concerned about the RFS, too. If, you know, are we going to let the free market work? And if it is, how do we make sure the commodity speculative funds are not exploiting this, you know, at the same time? And yet, how do we make sure that we have long-term protection and keeping our biofuels in policy? Because next year, we could be afloat in corn again, too.
Remind us what the Renewable Fuel Standard 2 tells us.
The Renewable Fuel Standards tells us that by the year 2022, we'd like to be at 36 billion gallons of renewable fuel. Now, in that, we're talking about up to 15 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol, but we're also trying to move into the cellulose ethanol part of it, too. Technology, unfortunately, has not yet got to the point where the cellulose part of it is. As chairman of the National Corn Growers Research and Business Committee, we're looking at different ways that we can address that issue. And one of those things is in corn fractionation, where we could take that fiber, the pericarp of that, and we can turn that into ethanol. That would fall under the RFS2 provision. If we were to do that on today's present corn ethanol usage, we could increase the by 2 billion gallons the amount of ethanol that we would get from corn starch, or I should say from the corn kernel, which is coming into the ethanol plants anyway. That doesn't include yet what we could possibly do with cob and fiber yet, too. And that's still another issue to be addressed.
But is that not specifically eliminated from the RFS2 by the word advanced from corn?
You know, that, and that's another good question is, what is advanced biofuels?
Right.
Right now, Illinois corn, we're trying to do those things that would try to increase corn starch as an advanced biofuels, and they can be some of the newer technology, heat recycling, water recycling, trying to do whatever we can to make corn starch ethanol advanced biofuel. But that runs into a political buzzsaw in Washington, D.C., because they're all concerned about the food versus fuel issue. So we have to understand the consumer's concern, and we also have to understand our concerns here as corn farmers to make sure that we do have enough for both markets.
Larry, thanks so much. Larry Hossider is with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. On stage with us as well this morning, this afternoon, that is Phil Nelson. Phil is the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau. Phil, thank you so much for being with us. You have to go to Washington and lobby on occasions. When you do that, what do you tell them about ethanol and about RFS2, about advanced, and whether that should remain in the RFS2 and eliminate the possibility of a future development for corn-based ethanol?
Well, we make it very clear to them that we think agriculture is a part of the solution as it relates to a comprehensive energy portfolio. We've said that for many years. We continue to pound that drum, and I think it's pretty eye-opening when you look at other countries such as Brazil that ramped up their renewable fuels within a decade. And we've kind of had our share of challenges trying to get from the first phase to the second, even trying to address the overall portfolio to get to that 36 billion gallons. It's going to take everybody being a part of that, not just the corn as we look at cellulosic research, but as Larry said, that research isn't there right now to try to really be a main player in that particular portfolio.
Even without action from Washington, D.C., the landscape for ethanol changes at the end of this year. Is that correct? And how does it change?
It does. We're going to, at this point in time, given what we have done in the deficit talks, we're probably going to have a challenge to try to get the remaining tax credit for infrastructure. But we still remain hopeful that that will get addressed. But given what is happening with the deficit talks, the super committee talks, that's all still up in the air as we speak.
Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Phil Nelson is with the Illinois Farm Bureau, serves as their president. Let's talk about what the future and price in Chicago might be with the CME Group. Dale Durkles, we're going to start with you because I see that, Dale, you have a terrible towel on. It's white.
It's my crying towel.
It's your cry.
It's my crying towel.
Are you throwing in the towel? Are we done? Is this it? Is that what you're
done? What do you mean by done?
Well, I don't know what that means.
Well, you got to qualify what done is. Done going up or done?
Are we done going up?
Getting worse.
Well, both. Are we done?
Both.
First, let's start with, are we done getting worse yet? And I take it you mean the crop.
In looking at some of the detail of the data, the August USDA report, and also understanding a few of the details of Pro Farmer's numbers, I think the yield number for the USDA in September will probably be a little bit lower than the one we had in August. I don't know that it's going to be significantly lower, but I'm thinking right now, depending on what it does or doesn't tell us, that might be the low watermark for yields for this series of production reports.
If it is the low water mark, are we done going up?
If you go back into two things, classic, when you have short crops, classic old rule is short crop, long tail. And I think basically when you start to think about short crop, long tail, it probably says we're going to have a high somewhere harvest or very early post-harvest. And then prices will dither away over time from there. The other thing that I think about at this point, as well as short crop, long tail, is I have this attitude that $7 is a new 3.5, and I think when you go back and look at history, anytime we've been over 3.5 corn, 6-8 months later, you're glad you sold it. So mainly, I'm thinking people need to be thinking about selling off the combine, and that's really how 83 trout played out too.
Dell Durkles is with AgriVisor, joins us here on stage at the Farm Progress Show, talking about short crop, a long tail. That's something that Darrell Good addressed in his weekly outlook this week. If you haven't been online to read that, you can. It's on the Farm Doc site at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Many people on stage with us now. Many of our analysts. Kurt Kimmel is here too. Kurt, we'll talk to you just a bit. You think this short crop long tail is in the cards for corn?
Longer term, but short term here, we're finding out how high is. Here, technically, we reached some near-term ejectees at 775, 780 area. We correct here for a day or two. There's some ideas we could go up into the mid-8s, but I don't think we're done to the upside, but eventually we will start to lose demand. You can always pay so much for a bushel of corn. Also, too, you got to remember, corn is competitive with feed wheat in the world. So we're seeing these guys tweak their rations using quite a bit more wheat than they have in the past. And if you really want to get bullish, I think you got to be bullish beans more than corn from here on out.
Greg Johnson from the Andersons. Tell me about the cash market, old crop corn at this point. Do you have any movement at all?
Old crop is basically over at this point. Harvest is starting, so there's very little old crop corn left. As far as new crop is concerned, farmers are anywhere from a third to a half sold of what they thought was a normal crop. That turned out to be a half to two-thirds of what is it really out there. So the last 2 years, it's paid to hold on to corn through the fall, and they sold too soon each of the last 2 years. This year, they don't seem to be in any hurry to make that same mistake again. So we're not seeing very much movement of new crop sales. Even in the last 50 to 75 cent move, we bought very little corn.
Are your bids over or under at this point?
We've improved from 28 under December about 2 months ago, and now we are 7 under December. So we're not quite over yet, and that's for the all-fall bid. For the quick shipment bid, of which there will be quick shipment premiums for the first 2 to 3 weeks of harvest of September, those bids are over December futures.
When a grain elevator across the board starts to pay overs, what kind of difficulties does it make for you as a merchandiser and for the elevator who operates on the cash basis to make their income?
The storage income is going to be greatly reduced this year, both for the elevator, commercial elevator, as well as the farmer. Right now, we're paying the same price for corn in January as we are for the fall price. So at today's market, there is no incentive to put that corn in the bin. Now, as we get into harvest, maybe that'll widen out a little bit, and there will be some return to carry in the market. But right now, there's very little return. You can sell your corn for the same price today right out of the field as you can for January.
Chuck Shelby with Risk Management Commodities is here. He's from Lafayette, Indiana. Chuck, you're a farmer. You have a couple of farmers in your operation. You recognized early on that it was a fairly short crop. When you talk to producers today and on the phone, do you hear people who are coming in with a better crop than they were expecting?
I don't think so. At this point, you know, a lot of guys are just getting out in the field. It was a crop that was kind of hard to tell, but some of the signs early when we had excessive rainfall, we had a lot of the Midwest, Todd. And then as we moved forward, that, you know, led to a lot of nitrogen loss. And I don't know why a lot of people were really surprised. It was one of the hottest, driest summers ever in many, many years. So I think it says a lot about the genetics we have that the crop may end up, you know, near 150 or whatever. It says a lot that there's a lot of good things, but it also says it can't do miracles either.
There are no miracles. We'll have a short crop. We've heard the word demand destruction used a couple of times so far in this 20-minute segment. Where does that destruction start?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with the short crop, long tail scenario because it's a little bit different environment. We've never had the giant China hanging around. If you notice every break we've had during the course from last year all the way through the winter, the tsunami break, we had world buyers step in and pick up this market. So another point to be made about the short crop, long tail is it's going to take more than 1 year to solve this problem. We still got a major drought going on in the Southwest. We've got pretty dry conditions in this part of the world, Todd. So I think as we move into 2012, the market's going to really be leery of the potential of what next year's crop is, and making that crop is going to be very important.
Aaron Curtis from Midco, do you have a couple of things that producers might be able to use in terms of contracts that might help them deal with the short crop long tail, if that's the case or not the case, and to make their way through this fall process?
Well, I think it's hard to pass up some of the prices you're going to see this fall. So I think if you want to take opportunities or take some advantage of some of those opportunities, you can sell the cash and replace it with some sort of a call option. That allows you to not only participate in the market, if the market continues to go up, you get your money, stop interest if you have it, stop your storage, and also allows you to participate in the upside if this market wants to continue to run.
Alan Brugler, you're with Brugler Marketing from Omaha, Nebraska. We have about a two-minute segment here, okay. Alan, left. When you talk to producers in your area of the world, in that western side, are they feeling pretty good about their crops still? And it looks to me like that drought-stricken area across Iowa, Missouri is pretty tough, and then Minnesota surprised some of us that they were quite so dry.
Yeah, basically what we're hearing is that in Nebraska itself, we're in pretty good shape. With 30% of the crops dry land, we've had rain this year, so the Nebraska average yield is going to be pretty high. The problem we've had is flooding back in the spring. We've got big chunks of, along the Missouri River in not only in Iowa, but in Nebraska and Missouri and South Dakota that are underwater. USDA is probably still too high on their harvested acreage number because of that, particularly in Missouri. We know there's problems in the central part of the Corn Belt. Frankly, the thing that concerns me the most is everybody's so dang bullish. All right? We're hearing everybody say, talking about, well, when corn gets to $9, how will we ration use? All right? Not if, when. Okay? And usually when, my rule is, when everybody wants to sell, when all the producers want to sell, it can't be the top. But when nobody wants to sell, we're probably pretty darn close. So I'm concerned about a short-term top here because of that psychology.
Wait, he said short-term top. He didn't say long-term top, right? I heard
correct,
that.
Correct. There is no long-term planning in this environment.
All right, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. We're coming to you today from the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. If you want to come and visit us, we have programs on the stage in the University of Illinois tent at the corner of 3rd and Western at 10 a.m. and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we should run right on through the 3 o'clock afternoon time frame. That 10 o'clock show hosted by Orion Samuelson.
We'll be at the Farm Progress Show both Wednesday and Thursday. Todd Gleason will have agricultural marketing panels at 10:30 in the morning and 2 and 3 in the afternoon. And you can also join him live in the University of Illinois tent for the Closing Market Report, that beginning at 2:06, both Wednesday and Thursday afternoon. Come on by and say hi.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can visit us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, posted not long after it airs on our radio station. Visit us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
From the Farm Progress Show, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason in Decatur, Illinois, live in front of a studio audience at the University of Illinois tent. Come and visit us if you'd like. We're at the corner of 3rd and Western. When you come in the main gate, just make a right-hand turn. We're about a block and a half down Western Avenue. On stage with us, a series of our analysts. We've been taking the corn market up. Time to just find out what each of them thinks about the soybean market in 45 seconds or less. We'll start with Chuck Shelby.
Well, the bean market has been the market that's been kind of ignored this year. Corn's been the primary focus, but beans are also in a tight scenario. We're looking at a bean market, again, at a few bushels yield reduction here with the kind of weather we're having as we move into late August. It's not exactly the best weather to fill these beans out. So it wouldn't be shocking to us to see the bean yield drop another bushel or two if this weather pattern persists. It is a tight world market, but we do have another big world supplier coming on in South America. But we would look for beans to have a fairly good strength as we move into harvest here and make a top in probably the $15 area would be our projected high for coming month here.
Kurt Kimmel?
Well, beans a bit taking the back seat, like Chuck said. Corn's been the glamour. Corn's going to have to compete with world feed wheat, so corn could probably stall out down the road. But whereas beans... China expanded corn acres and expensive beans. China has to buy beans. They're going to be in the market to fulfill their needs. South America saw corn expansion at the expense of beans. And plus, too, the weather pattern, the way it is, we could see El Niño. We could see weather production problems in the southern hemisphere. So from a producer's point of view, if you're going to sell something, maybe sell the corn, hang on to the beans. If you're a trader, I'd probably be trading beans.
I agree with both Chuck and Kurt. South America is going to grow more corn and not as many beans because it's more profitable, just like the U.S. farmers have made that decision. China bought beans last year. We had an excellent bean crop last year, and we still had $14 beans. This year, we've had an inch and a half of rain in Champaign in the month of July. We've had an inch and a half of rain in the month of August. We normally get 4 to 4.5 inches during those 2 months. So the bean yields are not going to be anywhere near as good as last year. Combine that with the demand from China, and bean prices still need to go higher.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Aaron Curtis is with Midco.
Well, largely why beans have been largely forgotten is we were in a dollar range from, you know, $13 to $14 there for probably 3 months. We finally broke through that here this last couple days. But I agree, we'll see some resistance at that $15 area depending on how weather finishes off. But look to be kind of more aggressive as we approach that $15 mark.
Alan Brugler from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, the thing you want to watch for here is really the soybean meal, because if corn is strong, it's the meal that's going to cause the beans to go up. Okay, you're going to need if you need that meal demand, or you don't get the bean rally. I agree, South America is going to be down in Brazil, but Argentina is actually going to expand quite a bit on beans.
And Dale Durholz.
I think one of the big things people need to think about in terms of beans, it's not that beans are going to function independently. They're functioning as a follower behind the corn market, and it's a price relationship that's holding them up right now.
Dale Durholz is with AgriVisor. We made it. They did it all in enough time. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Of course, it is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's WILLAG.ORG there. Everything from our pre-opening market report to the closing market report posted not long after we air it on our radio stations. And Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Again, WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason coming to you live from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. Have a great afternoon.